This is 5-on-3. Center ice for all things Islanders, Rangers, and all news across the NHL on WFUV Sports.
What up, what up, what up, what up? Welcome into 5-on-3 WFUV Sports' best, if not only, hockey podcast coming to you from the Boogie Down Bronx in the Rose Hill Studios of Fordham University's Bronx campus. I am James Burley, joined by Chris Carino and Tucker Austin. It is a great day for hockey in the tri-state area in New York City. The New York Rangers kicking it and doing some great stuff. They're going to be in Carolina tonight for Game 3 of their second-round series against the Carolina Hurricanes. But we're going to be talking about everything going on in the National Hockey League, in the swing of things in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And boy, oh boy, are things heating up. But first and foremost, it is finals week here at Fordham. I don't know if anybody else has any more finals. I just finished my last one 30 minutes ago, so I'm feeling pretty good.
Must be nice.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Tucker. I know, Chris, you're getting out of here soon. Already finished. So just how are the vibes right now, Chris? Let's start with you, man.
The vibes are good. Last night, our loyal leader, Bobby Chaffardini, and his class did a final here, actually, in the studio.
Shout out, Bobby.
I was a part of that, yeah. Got even kind of creative with our intro because we had to make podcast intros for all of them, and it kind of gave me a lot of ideas for maybe some new ones we might have to create around here as the tide changes. And we'll get into that, some of the themes of this playoff, similarly to here at the radio station. But kind of about my life, I finished last night. Now
Congrats.
I'm done. Obviously, we have those little miscellaneous things we need to turn in on Blackboard. For the most part, I'm done. Get to go home tonight. Texted the boys group chat at home, getting them excited. And, just kind of awaiting a, I would say, restful but also exciting summer.
For sure. For sure.
Yeah. Tucker?
Honestly, totally agree. I think our vibes are totally aligned right now. I've only got one written final left. I'm taking Spanish at 2:30 today. Got all my papers in, though, and everything's done. I'm moving out on Friday. Moving out on Friday, and looking forward to a nice summer and looking forward to watching the rest of the Stanley Cup playoffs from the comfort of my couch in my own home.
Yeah, and we've got a bit more news here at the station as well. I want to give a shout out to Lou Orlando and Will Talent, who are going to be leading the charge at organizing the station next year. A couple of juniors becoming seniors, and so proud of both of them. Absolutely deserved. Lou's the man, Will's the man, and they're going to do great things with the station. But I do have to say one thing to Lou. As it is his first week, the criticism already starts, you know. I don't know why he thought I'd be a good A-host for 5-on-3 this week. I've been seething since November of this NHL season. The Devils suck, and the Rangers are 6-0 through six playoff games. And, I don't know. I'm not feeling great right now. But
and also, let me just add this aspect to it. Julia, we would cut slack to. Staff assignments is like a month in advance thing. Lou started a week ago.
Yeah.
This was purposeful in almost every way.
It felt
cruel.
Targeted. It felt targeted. I'm happy to do it. You know, I'm a trooper, I guess. But
you love puck.
I do love the
true
game.
Puck guy. Along with Tucker as well.
I love the game. And Tucker, I mean, you're going through the same thing right now as well. I just wanted to say that. Lou, if you're listening, I mean, I get it. But I don't appreciate it. But I'm here for you, man.
Are you a Met fan too?
I die hard.
I'm sorry, buddy.
Yeah. So things
just like a lot.
You know, it's
I've seen the Yankees. I'm like,
so
he's got something going on.
I've never won
anything. Yeah.
Yeah. So
sorry, buddy.
Well, that's okay. That's why we do it. It's gonna feel that much sweeter.
That's what I say.
Yeah.
And my Nets delusion. That's usually my.
That's why we do it. That's New Jersey core.
Sorry, go on.
And anyway, we're gonna continue. I want to give a shout out to Angel behind the glass, doing a great job. Appreciate you coming in here and organizing things. So that's all the maintenance we got to do. Let's jump into the hockey. Let's actually take a step back from jumping into the hockey. Let's take a bit of a broader look just about how exciting these Stanley Cup playoffs have been. We got treated to two game sevens in the first round. We had one sweep by our city's very own Rangers. And we've had a lot to like, but we had a bit of a spirited discussion before we got on the air about how the NBA playoffs have been just as exciting, and I think you can look right here in the heart of New York City. Madison Square Garden's been bumping for the New York Knicks, who took down their I-95 rivals of the 76ers, and just the storylines across the NBA as a whole have been very exciting. And Chris, you were saying that it almost feels like the NHL playoffs have been maybe overshadowed a bit?
Well, yeah, because I think, and it's interesting, when the conversation started, obviously our point of views, you can see, are drastically different in a lot of ways. I do think this NBA playoffs, along with kind of what we, the narrative I was talking to Tucker about with the NBA, is that this new era is kind of emerging, and it really feels with Steph Curry getting eliminated, the Lakers getting eliminated, seems like the defending champions might get dethroned by a very young king in Minnesota. It really feels like the tide is turning and everyone's watching. And even the other aspect of it, where it feels like three or four first round series in the NBA turned it on, you were going to see a classic game. Mm-hmm. It didn't matter which game you watched, including a Knicks series, which, as a person who probably hates the Knicks more than anything in life, that's pain to say, but it's true. And, you know, not going to lie and say I watched last night, because I didn't. But when I kind of think about this NHL playoffs, kind of giving it credit, and I almost thought it was, you guys kind of thought it was a demeaning way, me talking about the NHL playoffs. It wasn't. I've been talking about, I was kind of saying it was so good, and it's been so good, this NHL playoffs, that due to the kind of headline-grabbing stuff that's happening in the NBA, it's getting diminished, and it's not getting talked about as much as I would like it to. Obviously, people like Spitting Chicklets, TNT on NHL and TNT, these kind of people are content machines. They do get things out there, but aside from them, I don't see a lot of fanfare when it comes to social media and things like that, that it could be. The potential's there. They're almost like in between basketball and baseball when it comes to PR, and they just need to get more toward basketball, and I think it would explode. Because even when I show people who don't watch hockey a playoff game, they're like, this is unbelievable. Yeah, yeah. I had my friend Taylor, we were at her house watching the game, and we left like before the third period started. She left the game on. I get a text from her at like 1 a.m. That was electric when when Trocheck scores the double overtime winner. Right. She watched the rest of the game just because of how intriguing it is. So I think there's a lot of appeal to be there, especially for casuals. And yeah, I just think the NBA has kind of dominated the headlines a little bit.
Chris, I think it's really interesting that you mentioned the NHL on TNT crew, because TNT obviously does games for both the NBA and the NHL.
Right.
And we've seen a lot of content so far this playoffs in the NBA and the NHL where those desks are kind of like
merging
a little bit. Have you
seen the
Shaq Hyman clip? Is hilarious.
Yeah, yeah. And I even my roommate even threw around the possibility of the NBA crew maybe going away, and I wasn't like terrified of that. I almost think that that's kind of, they're at a natural point now, or maybe it's time to get some new blood in there. Almost.
I believe that has something to do with like the contract with the network. I mean, I recently read about that, and you aptly pointed this out about me before we started, is that I'm probably biased in that I think, if anything, the NHL has been grabbing a lot of headlines. I don't keep my nose close to the hardwood, if you know what I mean. I'm not following the NBA as closely as most people at this station and just in the U.S. in general. I'm a hockey and soccer guy through and through. And I mean,
had a lot to chew on recently, to be fair.
This is very true. I mean, it's been a busy time just in our lives in general. But I think you make a good point about the changing of the guard in the NBA. What I will say about the NHL is that, I mean, the stars that there were in this league, this was one of the most star-studded NHL seasons we've had in a while, and I think it just goes to show Auston Matthews scores 69 goals and doesn't even get nominated for the Hart Trophy. I mean, we don't have to dive into that because we have all the playoffs, but this NHL season has been just a big boom in terms of goals, production, and excitement, and you couple that with my New Jersey Devils, I've almost felt like I've had my heart ripped out of my body, and the NHL season is going on, and it's just passing through my heartless, soulless being. And
just to give you some, can I help you a little bit?
Jump in.
I almost feel like there, what's happening in the NBA now, there's an undertowing of it that's about to happen in the NHL, and you can feel it. Guys like Zegras and Hughes, they're home right now watching, obviously, but they're watching guys like Crosby and guys like this, obviously not making it either, but they're still in the running and things like that. I think next year we'll kind of see what's happening in the NBA right now, where guys like Hughes, guys like Zegras, I'm trying to even think of the younger players. Yeah, even maybe a guy in Chicago we may or may not know. Maybe could be doing things during this time.
Throwing names in Ottawa as well. Tim Stützle is on that list. You know?
There's a guy in Columbus, too, who I think has maybe been treated unfairly, who can maybe do some things as well. And yeah, I just think it's an interesting kind of era that's going to start coming in, and this maybe is the last hurrah. Teams like the Rangers, team like Colorado, they feel like now, and it feels like the now is kind of slowly becoming the past, and that'll be good for hockey as well in a lot of ways. Yeah,
and then,
give you hope in New Jersey.
Well, look, and there should be. They should have been better than they were this year, but that is neither here nor there. That's the last we mentioned, that godforsaken team at the moment. No pun intended, Devils godforsaken. Anyway, let's go.
That was a good one.
Let's start with the modern. Let's start with the now. And let's go to the Colorado Avalanche, because we'll end with New York, because we're in New York. And
fair.
The champion from two seasons ago fell at the wayside last year to this Dallas team, and now they lead 1-0 in the series. They play tonight in Dallas at 9:30 at the American Airlines Arena. 4-3 overtime win in the first game, and I got to tell you, I've never been more impressed by an overtime win from the Colorado. Like, it sounds stupid to say that, like, oh, they were up 3-0 after the first period and still came back. I mean, Dallas, for as good as they are, I mean, they really underestimated who I think are, from top to bottom, excluding the position of goaltender, might be the most well-rounded team in the NHL.
They're incredibly fast.
Yes.
And I think, like, the overtime goal is probably the perfect example of
just
the
speed.
Depth of the Avalanche yeah. speed. Miles Wood, and I know you already said we wouldn't mention the Devils anymore, but former Devil
so
Miles
Wood.
Oh, man. I wasn't even, like, connecting that.
I'm surprised he wasn't in the box.
Yeah, but oh, what a filthy, filthy goal. He beats his man straight up with blazing speed, goes forehand, backhand, and just slips it by.
How many times have we seen him, like, try to score a goal like that and just fail miserably and
he
crash
He was
into
that
the
fast,
post?
Though.
Yeah,
like,
no,
he's
faster than he knows. Like, who's the kid who can't stop in the Mighty Ducks D2?
Rodriguez, the one from Sandlot.
Yeah,
Benny
the Jet Rodriguez, whatever his name as the skater, is literally Miles Wood. This time he figured it out, and he's got 3 goals in the playoffs already. And that's coming from a fourth liner.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not to mention Nichushkin, who's got 8 goals in the playoffs already. This is ridiculous production from a ridiculously good team. And that's not to mention you got the Dallas Stars, who I think, for my money, play as good a team defense as any team in the NHL. And you have a backstop like Jake Oettinger, who's really playing some of his best hockey in a couple seasons, I would argue. He didn't look great down the stretch last year, and that kind of culminated in their exit from the playoffs. But for me, this series is as tight as it gets. I think whoever wins this series could very well be the Stanley Cup finalist from the Western Conference.
Yeah, and I just wanted to say, like, I don't know if another team in the NHL has more momentum than the Stars right now, kind of heading into the second series. Obviously, I think a lot of people thought Vegas would win that series, and I even was talking with Tucker about it earlier. They're such a likable team, and a lot of players in Vegas played there and just seemed like they wanted them to win, and they wanted the best for Dallas moving forward. Kind of looking at this series now, to man that storm the way they do, especially with everything I just said and the amount of momentum they had coming into this game, to man the storm, to be so dominant and then lose it and then finally persevere, that's championship puck in every single way. And it was the things they were showing me, and it reminds me of what they showed me the year they won the whole thing. It was just those kind of series where it's like they shouldn't win, or it's just like, of course they're going to win. It's one of those two, and every single time they would persevere, and it really feels that way.
Mm-hmm.
Also, with the Colorado, and I speak kind of more in broad kind of poetic terms, there was an inevitability with Colorado the year they won where it just felt like they were inevitable.
No, they were a leg above every team and everyone.
Yeah,
knew.
And for a guy who is obviously a fan of maybe the favorite on the other side of the bracket, like, this kind of game really scares me because it really feels like that inevitability is very prevalent.
Well, this is something that also certainly applies to the Rangers, and it's something that we talk about every year in the playoffs, is how long your first series goes may have a direct correlation to how successful you are later on.
Right.
I mean, Dallas and Vegas went to 7 games, as you would expect. Vegas, the fact that they are the second wild card in this Western Conference just shows how top heavy that conference is, and how, with the injuries that they face, they still manage to be a very good hockey team. They bounce around between goalies.
Compared to the other side. Yeah.
I mean, you look at the wild card teams on the Eastern Conference, neither of those teams really belonged in a playoff discussion.
Right.
I mean, Tampa Bay, yes, but the Islanders sneaking into third in the Metro. I mean, come on, I never really felt like they were that strong of a playoff team, let alone the Capitals.
I'm done talking about the Devils after this. Devils and Pittsburgh, like, these are teams that should have been playoff teams.
Yeah, should be in the playoffs with the roster that they have. And
sorry,
and then you look at Colorado-Winnipeg. That series goes 5 games. For as good Winnipeg were throughout the season, they loaded up at the deadline with Monahan and Toffoli, and they only go 5 games. It doesn't surprise you because it was Colorado. But, I mean, game one goes to overtime. It doesn't surprise me that Colorado are able to outlast Dallas, who went to 7 games against the reigning champs. And I think the Rangers, having played just 6 games now through the playoffs and are taking a 2-0 lead into the second round series, I think that's a huge crutch going forward for them, because this Florida-Boston series, if you think that that's stopping at 5-6 games, you got another thing coming. That's another 7-game series most likely, and that's 2 heavy hitters who, on paper, should the Rangers go through past Carolina, could probably give the Rangers a run for their money.
And is this a side note, or are we talking rags now?
I'm talking side note right
okay,
now.
Okay,
we're gonna stay on the West, but this is just.
I was gonna say just because it's 2-0, I still feel this is 7. It feels 7 with Canes. It does. It just does. They were so evenly matched. Get outplayed a lot of minutes in this series so far through the first two games. I know it's a side note, but
it's a side note, and I'm gonna I'm gonna continue on the tangent real quick. I'm gonna talk about what Florida and Carolina did last year and how that felt like it could have gone to 7, and it most certainly did not.
Right.
But to stay on the West,
go on.
I think Colorado, having played 5 games against what is a elite Winnipeg Jets team and making easy work of them and making Connor Hellebuck not look like an elite goaltender, that should be the most scary. The fact that they have all these, one of the deepest teams, I think the deepest team in the National Hockey League, has fresher legs, that's a scary thing. Let's jump to Western Canada, though. And what is a heated rivalry that you were talking all about, Tucker. So I'm going to throw this one to you first. That comeback from the Vancouver Canucks over the Edmonton Oilers, it demonstrated just how good this Vancouver team has been. They've been doubted all season long. They were in the President's Trophy race from the drop of the puck this season. Yet, this Oilers team got so much praise for that 14-game heater they went on. I mean, they have the stars to back it up. McDavid, Draisaitl, and now I would add Hyman and Nugent Hopkins right up there with them. The defense is still the same thing it's always been in the playoffs every year. Just so vulnerable to giving up a patch of goals. I think it was 3 goals in 4.5 minutes or something or other to tie the game and then win it in the third period for Vancouver. 4 straight goals unanswered. I mean, I want to give praise to Vancouver, but I keep looking at the Oilers, and people were trying to tell me this team feels different. And I know it's only one game in the second round. They already beat the Kings in 5. That series was not close, and it should not have been. But I keep asking myself the same questions every year of the Oilers. This team is too top-heavy and needs a better goaltender. For as good as Skinner was through the second part of this season, I'm never convinced by the Edmonton Oilers.
Yeah, and I think the
love
way
that. That's a great way of saying it. Yeah. Never convinced by them.
The way this game went kind of just feels like it feels very Vancouver Canucks from this season. I saw a stat. I'm not 100% sure, but I think it said that 3 of their 4 wins in the first round series were come from behind.
Yeah, that doesn't
so
surprise me.
This is a team that battles, and like you should not be surprised if they go down early. But a 4-1 lead early is a much different story. Edmonton looks super dominant in the first 2 periods of Game 1. They go up 4-1. Their power play scored the only time it was on the ice, but I think that's more of a credit to Vancouver for limiting their penalties and
for
keeping
sure.
that Oilers power play off the ice. It's kind of like a Rangers situation where, like, if the power play is on, they will probably
they're
be scoring.
They're going to punish you.
Like, and with the Oilers, it's like they will score.
Mm-hmm. And especially because both teams have been struggling kind of in the 5-on-5. You don't want to just give them a break, especially in the playoffs where it's like you're going to give them such an advantage.
Yeah, and Edmonton had... They had great performances from most of their core guys, too. Hyman had 2 goals. Draisaitl had 2 assists.
McDavid had a point.
Nugent Hopkins had 2 assists. But my point about McDavid was actually he had the second highest time on ice on the Oilers with 24 minutes and 3 seconds, and he only had 1 assist.
Yeah.
I need so much more
out of
Connor McDavid to solidify an Oilers win in game 1 here. Like, I think Connor McDavid not really showing up is kind of the reason
That's
why Vancouver
point.
Was able to come back. And... come back they did. Third period, they put up 3 goals in 5 minutes. Their tying and winning goals were separated by 39 seconds, and
yeah,
Edmonton did not have a single shot on goal after Hyman's second goal with 7 minutes left in the second period until 4 minutes left in the third.
They had 2 shots in the third period total, which is just absolute domination from Vancouver. But for a 5-4 game, this is about the tightest 5-4 game I've ever seen. This game was contested mostly in the neutral zone until the third period when Vancouver got a barrage of goals. And yeah, keeping Edmonton, staying out of the box against Edmonton is obviously the recipe for success. You give that power play 2-3 chances to score, they're going to probably get at least 1 or 2 goals. But I will direct you to the shots counter. 24 shots on target for Vancouver. That's not a great number. And then you look at Edmonton, 18 total. This was a tight game that should not have been 5-4.
It's an insane amount of goals to be scored on
exactly.
many shots. It's ridiculous.
It just shows like how fruitful these teams are when they get their chances, but it also shows Vancouver does not want to let Edmonton get their speed going, because if those top 2 lines especially have the chance to skate at open ice, McDavid is going to punish you, and he didn't have that opportunity to do that. He's got to take some responsibility. He's the best player in the world, but I got to give Vancouver a lot of credit. They've defended well all season long. did they give up four goals in the first two periods? Yes, but they had enough in the tank to go ahead and win it. And I mean, Nikita Zadorov's slap shot, that was an absolute howitzer. I mean, that's a guy that they pick up midseason.
He's having a great playoffs,
having
too,
a great playoff.
Veteran D-man with 5 points so far through seven games. You can't ask for anything better.
You talk about the acquisitions playoff teams make to become successful. I think I don't want to keep talking about the Rangers in that regard, but, you know, they go and get Tarasenko and Kane, and they exit first round of the playoffs. Meanwhile, Vancouver is picking up a guy like Zadorov, who's just going to shore down your defense. Elias Lindholm, who's going to be that great two-way forward. These are the types of moves that, like, a team gets. They go and get veterans who you're not expecting to score all the goals. There's only one puck out there. Not everybody is going to be like your Patty Kanes, your Tarasenkos, your Panarins, your Zibanejads. You're not going to get everybody to create everything.
Another example, Gensel, I mean, more of an offensive threat, but kind of a veteran guy at the deadline. Like, and especially how they play and how he's kind of gelled with that core.
A guy who's won Stanley Cups.
Seems like he's been there for 7 years. Yeah. Like, he's gelled really well.
Pretty seamless over there. I think that, look, this series is obviously not over. It's one game. But it's the same issues that plague the Oilers year after year, in my opinion. I don't know if Stuart Skinner, like, as good as the Oilers can be, is Stuart Skinner a Stanley Cup winning goaltender?
No.
Probably not, but I would not have said Aiden Hill was last year either. So we got to keep that in mind.
It's a very fair point.
It's a very fair point, but also Aiden Hill, I mean, has proven this season why he was that good. He's been a top five, top 10.
And they're also not Vegas.
And they're not
Vegas.
Look
at that roster.
That team top to bottom was so well constructed, and the fact that they had to play Dallas in the first round just goes to show how tight this conference is. This series is not going to stop at four games. It's going to continue. But I have to say, the Canucks, I like them a lot. And I know I gave a lot of praise to Dallas and Colorado. Whoever wins that series goes to the Cup. If they're going to have to go past Vancouver, they're going to have to play some damn good hockey to reach the Stanley Cup final.
And a damn tough environment as well.
Absolutely. We know what happens when the Canucks get to the Cup final and don't win it. The city burns.
They're all babies. Like, I have a whole rant about this,
go ahead.
Like, nah, I'm not even gonna do it. But it kind of goes into the whole Oiler rivalry where
we'll cross that bridge when it gets there.
It feels 0-4 Red Sox in so many ways because it really feels like this Oiler kind of aura they have is diminishing, and they're nowhere near anything that they were in the past.
Right.
But
okay.
They still have that aura,
and they still have the stars too.
Yeah, and the underdog feels it's undeserved, and the underdog has never really won anything, and they kind of have a chance now. And especially with this
series, I love this analogy, by the way.
I love it so much. It's fitting too well, almost.
But then they're babies. Like, I'm gonna get into why they're babies, because they don't win anything. They constantly talk about it. You can't be like that, like lonesome, like frowning, and then burn your city down when you lose a Stanley Cup. Why do you have such high expectations? You've never even been, or you have. You lost to us, our bad. But like, you can't have these high expectations and burn this. Like, that put such a poor image in my head of like Vancouver as their fans, especially at a young age. I was young when that happened, and I just feel like the Canucks and Vancouver in general, as a sports fan city, I've always had a distaste for like my entire life because of that.
Well, I think
that one picture of them kissing in the street with the fire behind them, that's cool.
I mean, there's so many photos that go so hard from that event, but the fact remains, if you lose the Stanley Cup, best not to burn down the city.
Yes,
ideally.
Such a beautiful city, too. Like, what are they doing?
Absolutely gorgeous in the Cascadia region of the Pacific Northwest. But that series, I mean, we'll keep our eye on it. Edmonton were the better team for a big portion of that game, even though the power plays weren't going their way. So that's something we're going to have to keep our eye on. If Vancouver can stay out of the box, though, it'd be hard to pick the Oilers to go through in this round. That's where we leave the West. Let's jump over to the East. We're going to talk Atlantic Division. Bruins-Panthers, and I mean, talk about two sides of the same coin. Game one, Bruins 5, Panthers 1. They march into Sunrise, and they absolutely demolish the Panthers. But they woke those cats up.
The Panthers took that personally.
They took it really personally. So did Matthew Tkachuk, because he wanted to scrap. And look, credit to David Pastrnak for answering the bell. But,
it's like one of the worst fights I have ever seen in the NHL. Like, it was just wild swinging. It wasn't even a real fight.
Just so much
like,
prominent, but you never see that.
Pastrnak falls
prominence.
Down, Tkachuk fell down like halfway through, and then still took a shot at Pastrnak, and then he kept throwing like over the refs.
It was
really weird.
As technique goes, not a good tale of the tape there.
When do you see the two most popular players, especially in a playoff series, fighting each other, though? Like, that's crazy.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's true.
It's not new territory for Tkachuk, but for him to go after a guy like Pastrnak is new territory, and for Pastrnak to answer the bell, credit to him. But and when you're down by four goals and then you give up another one later, it doesn't look good in the third period. I will say the Florida Panthers are just about as resilient a team as any in
and
the
tough
NHL.
As well.
Like a season and a half ago, we were not talking about Sam Reinhardt as a star in this league, and he absolutely is.
Four assists in game two. That's just ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
Some Adam Fox type.
Tell you what, I saw statistics of the goaltending in this playoffs, and for the Florida Panthers, they play an erratic style of hockey. This is known. Paul Maurice does not have them playing the most polished style of game. They like chaos. They feed off it. High goal scoring games are a trend that they had both this season, throughout the playoffs this year, and into the playoffs last year when they just made it by the skin of their teeth. But Sergei Bobrovsky is absolutely class. I think he's the most, you know, traditional of the goaltenders in the sense that he is so reactionary-based, where he's a smaller guy. He uses such a small stick. He stays so true to the center of the goal, but he seems like his reactions are so quick, and he's always in the right spot. I don't love giving this guy praise, but you constantly hear Henrik Lundqvist saying he sees a lot of himself in the way Sergei Bobrovsky plays the game, and he appreciates the little details that Bob always gets right. And I think that is portrayed beautifully in how the Panthers win games. They don't give up juicy rebounds. They keep the puck clear out of the center of the ice. And, yeah, do they always look pretty doing it? No. But they make it absolute hell for the team that they're playing against. And when they get going, that momentum is really hard to stop. That's exactly what we saw in game two. The Bruins had no answer for it. And I don't think Jeremy Swayman had a bad game, but you're down 4-1 in the playoffs, and you've got Linus Ullmark as your backup, the Vezina winner from last year. It makes sense to change the goaltenders. Didn't work out, and the Bruins found themselves on the back foot for about 60 of 60 minutes last night.
I think we could look at the shot charts again, to be honest, because game one, Jeremy Swayman is absolutely lights out. He saves 38 shots on 39 on him, which is just
insane.
That's perfect from your goalie, especially in the playoffs. But then you move to game two, and with the script getting flipped, the Bruins only got 15 shots off in the entire game on Sergei Bobrovsky.
I did not know
he's not letting in more than... I'm actually shocked he let one in on 15 shots.
Yeah.
It's Bobrovsky.
And it wasn't even glaring enough for me to look to see how many shots they took. Like, I didn't even think about it.
No, but it was like it was just really bad. I didn't expect it to be that bad, but they really... Wow. Like, it just seems like they did not put up much of a fight at all. And then... Yeah, the Pasta and Tkachuk fight was just so weird. Like the goals had already been scored for the entire game at that point, and they just start swinging for no reason. I really think the only reason that happened is because it was in Florida. Like, Tkachuk is not getting away with that in Boston.
Absolutely not.
I was going to say something, but that's a fantastic point. Yeah, that's very true. Also, just like a little side note, this doesn't matter, very insignificant. I'm going to miss these Centennial jerseys. These Bruin jerseys
the
are
gold,
so cool.
Yeah,
I'm going to miss them. Yeah. I like love watching Bruin games and they're wearing them, and they have to go back to these stupid yellow jerseys. just keep them. Like, just keep them. You know what I mean? Go on.
Well, what I will say about this series thus far is that I don't expect it to be as back forth. I think they've gotten that out of the way, and I think we're going to see some of the tightest hockey we've seen throughout the playoffs in the next couple games. I'm not saying it's going to be low scoring, but I think they're going to be much closer than these ones, because they've had this tug of war. It's going to go back to the garden, as you said. But this Boston Bruins team is too experienced and has too great of a spine in every position, except for maybe center, to then go and let this happen again. I don't think they're going to. I think the Panthers are too rigid of a team and too physical of a team to go ahead and get beaten by four goals again, especially in their own backyard. I think this series is going to go to seven. It's going to be super, super tight. But I think that plays easily into the Panthers' favor, even though, I mean,
yeah, the Bruins did go to seven with the Leafs.
Can I ask you something kind of on the lines of this? Do you think, when do you think that'll, the run last year, especially with how unpredictable it was, kind of catches up with them? Because I feel like going on a cup run where you're playing in the cup and things like that, especially when you don't really have expectations of it, and then the next year you're again in the second round, like, when does that start to catch up with this roster? Especially a roster that hasn't changed a lot either.
Honestly, I think it's I think it is helpful in that they've been there before, and honestly, they made it look easy at times last year.
They did.
They. I don't think this is a team that is like...
Especially that Hurricane series, as you said.
Yes. I don't think this team is like beholden to the pressure. If anything, they're feeding off of it just because of the way that they like to play. Like, I see the Panthers as the team that the New York Islanders really wants to be.
True.
In the sense that the adversity is something that they feed off of, but the Islanders just do not have the top end production or the depth that this Panthers team has.
Yeah.
I would say in any position on the ice, including goaltender, for as good as Sorokin is, he does not have the pedigree of success that Sergei Bobrovsky does. I will say this about the Boston Bruins before we move on to Rangers Hurricanes. I lost all respect for Boston after the way that they handled that series against Toronto. That series should have been done at five games. Absolutely should have. And they took their foot off the gas. Game six, no Matthews, and they still couldn't figure it out. That Toronto team, credit to them. Joseph Woll, in the end of the stretch, played phenomenally in goal, and they're a star-studded team that can hurt you when they have the chances to do so. But for the Bruins being as experienced as they were and for how they let the series go against them last year against Florida, I didn't think that they would let them do it again. For a team that we often praise for their experience and winning pedigree and culture of always making the playoffs and bullying around some of the lower teams in the Atlantic Division, they have not appeared that way in the past two playoffs. I know they lost a veteran presence in that time in Patrice Bergeron, but the response from the Panthers in Game 2 makes me think that I think we're going to see something similar from the Bruins. Again, I think they're going to take their foot off the gas. I'm taking Florida in this series in either six or seven games for as tight as the next few games are going to be. I just feel like they have that mental edge over the Bruins, and this is something that we always say about Boston is their mentality. For now, I'm not convinced by it.
Don't you even feel like, obviously, and I'll let you go in, Tucker, it's just a small thing, mm-hmm. but obviously Bergeron is a big, you know, loss.
Yeah.
They just have felt different since Char is gone. Like, they just have felt different. Like, have they won since Char is gone?
No.
Like, oh, obviously not, but they just have felt different. It's not even a success thing. It's just an aura thing. Like, they just don't feel like the big, bad Bruins, and I think a lot of that, if not most of that, can be tracked to when Chara left, and Bergeron obviously doesn't help, especially more, like, on-ice needs. Like, that's obviously, like, the guy basically made a NHL cover because of how good he was at face-offs.
Yeah.
When you kind of think about the aura and kind of what this team is and the identity of this team, yeah, Marchand is there, things like that. But as we said, Pasta's the face. It just feels like a different kind of generation, different
Absolutely.
Kind of aura. And it just it doesn't feel like a scary one, kind of to your point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to bring it back to the conversation we were having earlier about the NBA, like the Boston Bruins are kind of like they have been aging for years now and they continue to get older. Brad Marchand is 35.
Rat.
So still a beast, though.
He's still a beast, but who knows how long he has left in the league now.
This is true.
Like, when does Boston have to really look at, like, okay, we have to give up the old guard and just look to the new now? And
it's not,
like,
easy to do that.
It's not easy, and especially when you have such beloved players in your franchise that the fans don't even want to see go. Like, you wind up with guys that might be just burning holes on the roster, and, like, you have on-ice needs that you can't fill because there's just guys skating around. Somebody like an Ovechkin just kind of, like, doing
kind
nothing,
became
but
a passenger.
The fans are there because, or like he's there because of the fans. Boston has done a good job though of like staying competitive throughout the past like decade plus. But this could be the transitional point where maybe we lose Boston, maybe even from playoff contention for a couple years within the next 5 years,
which feels like insane.
It does feel insane, but like I don't think we can sit here and say that this Bruins team is going to be like competing for Stanley Cups into the next 5 years when they're probably going to get bounced by the Panthers again for the second year in a row.
I think going back to perhaps a couple years ago, going into last season before the Bruins set the record with the greatest regular season in NHL history. Not a lot of people picked them to win that division. A lot of people had them, you know, barely making the playoffs as either the third in the Atlantic or a wild card behind the likes of Toronto and Tampa. But they flipped that on its head and everyone kind of remembered, okay, this is the Bruins. This is the team that they're going to be that good. But now it's changed not only because of the change of the guard, but I would argue that maybe we aren't giving enough credit to just how good the goaltending is compared to the rest of that team. That's a great team from top to bottom. Don't get me wrong, with a great spine and defense. But this is just about the best goaltending duo you will ever see in your lifetime in the NHL.
For sure.
You have Jeremy Swayman, who has a Vezina candidate this year. You had Linus Ullmark, who's the Vezina winner this year, and you could just pick and choose between both of them, and we saw that be an absolutely contentious choice in the playoffs last year, where Game 7, Round 1, against the Panthers, they changed from Ullmark to Swayman after Ullmark gave up a couple soft goals in Game 6, and that kind of backfired. I wouldn't say Swayman was at fault for the Game 7 result, but, I mean, you change around the momentum of the team, you mess with it.
Which in the moment I didn't love.
And in hindsight it didn't pay off. I think that's the coaching choice you make if you're Jim Montgomery. It just didn't go the way that you wanted it to. But the fact remains, this goaltending tandem is remarkable. The goalies, whoever it is, Ullmark, Swayman, you're gonna get a great performance out of them. Maybe that has been a bigger crutch to the success of this Bruins team over the past 2 years than we've given it credit for.
For sure.
And just a goaltender is never going to win you the playoffs. You can steal a game. You can't steal a cup. So let's talk Rangers-Hurricanes. This is the main event, if you will, for us here in New York City. And, yeah, so the Rangers are good, I guess. I guess that's how it is. Vinny Trocheck in double overtime. I will give the Rangers credit where it's due. They are the best team in the Eastern Conference, and if they don't get to the Stanley Cup final, they will have missed a big, big opportunity to get their coveted cup.
I see what you're doing.
Maybe I'm trying to jinx it, but I'm also being very honest.
It would be like a travesty if
it would not be a travesty.
It would be a disaster. I wouldn't be surprised if New York wound up a little bit like Vancouver after that cup final, if the Rangers don't make the final at all.
I'm going to be completely honest with you. We do not care about hockey.
I was going to say, if the Knicks are still in it, no one's going to care.
Yeah.
But,
which makes me want to, like, die in a lot of ways. But I'll tell you what.
In the playoffs last year, questions were asked of Mika Zibanejad, Artemi Panarin, and, I mean, to a degree, Adam Fox, actually, of whether or not these guys are built to succeed in the playoffs. Do they show up in the big moments or not? And these guys are bona fide stars in the league. Artemi Panarin had an incredible season. Adam Fox is perhaps the second best defenseman in the National Hockey League after Kale McCarr. And you can make a case for Quinn Hughes as well. But you absolutely could. Don't give me that look,
Chris.
You can
make one. It's not a good one.
Well, it's a fantastic one. But I digress.
Adam Fox, do you understand? Have you ever watched Adam Fox play hockey? He's so good.
Have you watched Quinn Hughes?
Yes, I have, but it's just different. You know it's different.
I think they're actually incredibly similar.
You swap them, you think that Quinn is better for the Rangers?
If I swap them, I think they have more or less the same output as they do. Yeah,
I don't agree.
Quinn Hughes led the league in assists.
You think that they're in this like almost the exact same?
Quinn Hughes and Adam Fox are in the same category of defensemen. Absolutely.
I think there's three categories at the top. I think it's like Quinn, Adam, Kale.
I think it's Kale is in its own category up top. And then I would put in the second category Adam Fox.
Quinn scores
Quinn
a lot of points.
Yeah, Adam Fox.
Adam was hurt for months.
Yeah, okay. I'll put Fox, Hughes, and Roman Josi in the second layer of like
what's Adam's games played?
If the second is like the top, and then Kale McCarr gets his own tier, nobody else.
Kale McCarr
is there.
Has his own tier. Yeah. And then in the second tier below, you put guys like Adam Fox, Quinn Hughes, and Roman Josi. And I would also go, I mean, not for the offensive output, but I'd also put Victor Hedman right there.
He has 73 points in 72 games.
Yeah,
like,
it's fantastic.
That's
it's a point per game. That's incredible.
And that's on 46 assists. Like, that's a lot.
That is fantastic.
Is Quinn on a point a game?
I'm not knocking Adam Fox at all.
Said he scores a lot. He gets a lot of points.
He does get a lot of points.
He's got 21 points through 24 career playoff games, too. So he can show up in the playoffs.
Wow, that's
He's also
really
got
good.
92 points in 82 games. How about 75 assists for Quinn Hughes?
75 in the regular season?
Yeah. You said you watched him, man.
God.
I thought you knew that.
Well, obviously, not all 75. Okay, I didn't see all of them, but that's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, and Adam Fox did miss time, but Quinn Hughes scores a lot of points.
He missed 10 games. In those 10 games, if Adam Fox had 30 more assists maybe I would say there's no comparison. There's absolutely a comparison, and it's a good case.
It's like Minka having 11 points through the first six playoff games. Like, it's like impressive, but like less impressive.
Sure, because it's a short amount of time.
11 points is ridiculous.
Especially on a team that has so much talent where it could go the other way. What I will say that I didn't get to just yet, Alexis Lafreniere with 2 goals.
Oh my God.
I mean, for as good of a season as he had, 30-goal year, you know, you weren't necessarily expecting him to be the guy in the playoffs, and he can be. They've had contributions from all over the ice. That's the scariest thing. Last year it was about, can the stars produce? Well, now it's like, can the guys in addition to the stars produce? And the answer is yes. They've answered the bell, and they've never looked like they were going to lose in any game they've played yet in the series. Even when they were down against Carolina, it never felt like they were out. No. And I will say this, for as much as Carolina has to stay out of the box, the power play did not win this game for the Rangers.
No.
I think if Carolina stayed out of the box entirely, they would be doing a lot better. But Carolina can't score on the power play either. They were 0-10 through the series thus far.
Yeah, and they weren't getting a lot of shots on the power play either. It was giving me, we're going to mention them again, but it was giving me extreme Devil's power play vibes from like January to March. Vibes.
Extreme like, Dougie Hamilton-less Devil's power play.
Oh my God, like one or two shots per power play, like nothing really happening of note. Like,
and you're
speaking
about the Ranger power play, right?
No, Carolina.
Oh, Carolina power play.
Yeah, no, because the Rangers power play is gross. Yeah, it's actually one of my issues for Carolina. Like, their key to keep, like, to try to bring the series back to manage is that they need to limit all penalties like as fast as possible.
To his point, it didn't win them the game.
No,
it really didn't. Felt like the Carolina, the points that we got power play in the Rangers got power plays, it felt like Carolina was dominating those points, so it really didn't feel like the Rangers could really like be like taking 30 shots on a one power play like they do a lot, especially in that Washington series. But like, especially when Tony D'Angelo, that little
with
rat
Miller.
The box.
You see that?
No, yeah, but you see him smiling in the box, and then after 7 seconds,
sucks,
the Rangers scored. Dude, doesn't he suck?
No one likes him.
Even as a Devil fan, like, doesn't he suck?
Yeah, I mean, he was also a Ranger, so it's easy to hate him.
Yeah.
He's a Ranger and a Hurricane. I'm not going to like that guy.
Just the worst dude. And even, like, yeah, him talking to Keanu, like, how much bravado can you have talking to a guy that much bigger than you?
Yeah.
Like, it
blows
my mind.
That's that
have you bought a shirt from the clothing line?
No, I've not. But that in and of itself,
Tucker.
No, I've not.
That in and of itself,
though,
is that in and of itself is remarkable, and that we can make a whole podcast just on Tony D'Angelo and how much we don't like that guy. But what I will say is the stylistic approach of this Hurricanes team, even if they're giving up 10 power plays a game and the Rangers don't score, that is obviously going to hamper them. This Hurricanes team likes to play with momentum. They're a neutral zone team.
I would argue they're an offensive zone team.
This is true. This is true. But they win the game in the neutral. That's how they beat the Devils last year. And that series was not close because the Devils couldn't get their legs through the neutral zone. The Hurricanes out-physicaled them, outplayed them. But the Rangers are a puck possession team where at 5-on-5, they're not great, but if you give them a chance to play around with the puck for a while, they're going to hurt you, even if it's not on the power play. You give them 7 power plays in a game and they only score on one, you're giving them 14 minutes where they're going to control the puck.
Yeah.
That's a quarter of the game.
You're right.
You can't afford to give that much of a leash to the New York Rangers, even if they're not going to take it on the man advantage. They're going to take the momentum out of your hands,
yeah.
And that's just not sustainable for Carolina. If they want to have a chance in coming back in the series, which I think they don't, they're going to have to stay out of the box and just keep this game at 5-on-5. The Rangers, and this goes back to last year, and it does this year, their advanced statistics at 5-on-5 are league average. They're about 14th, 15th in terms of game score at 5-on-5. They've never been a team that's going to outskate you entirely. It's going to beat you in the neutral zone. What they will do is when they have chances in the offensive zone, they're opportunistic, they are fruitful, and they know what to do with the puck. They have stars that are going to create chances in ways that you don't see on other teams. There's no player like Artemi Panarin in the National Hockey League right now. And you can't say that about a lot of stars. You can say that about Connor McDavid, Nikita Kucherov, Cale Makar, and Artemi Panarin, and maybe Austin Matthews now. I think there's... and
Kachuk's a hell of a player.
Kachuk's a hell of a player, but I think there's a lot of players like in the style
I know
of
saying.
Matthew Kachuk that, you know, not that he's replaceable, that's not the right word, but like I think of Matthew Kachuk in the same way I think of Brad Marchand. You know, there are guys who can do both things on both ends of the ice, who are absolute grinders, physical guys who can hurt you if they get a chance, but are also nasty with the puck and can create plays unlike many players in this league. I don't think Artemi Panarin has a like-for-like replacement throughout the NHL. That is specific to him, but this Rangers team feeds off that so well.
And you brought up Lexi, too, so let me just talk. Like,
jump in.
Lafreniere, I don't think anyone on this roster plays harder than him. He is playing so hard, and I really think, and you could see it because he was so different when we played the Devils.
He had something
last
to prove,
year.
You know?
It's not even. It's this year, it's a sense of belief that he has from his team. You know, obviously, Tarasenko goes, Kane goes. They made him and Keandre priorities in the offseason, so now he has this sense of, like, trust behind him, and then also now has a sense of belonging thinking as well. I am meant to be here. I've played in the playoffs.
I scored 30 goals.
I've excelled in the playoffs against Tampa, against Carolina a few years ago. And then, yeah, 30 goals. Of course, a great regular season helps. Now, with all that going for him, now he's just playing hockey. That's kind of where his potential really shines the most.
The vibe that the Rangers are giving off is just it's too good to turn my eye away from and say, well, it's just going to be another year where they crash out in the playoffs.
I feel that way about the Knicks, and it really makes me want to like lose my mind.
Like, I wanna be able to say that, like, even if the Rangers had beaten the Devils last year, I don't think I would have been scared that they would have gone on to win a Stanley Cup. They weren't that team.
They weren't clicking right.
They didn't go into the playoffs that hot. Igor did not have as good of a season as he has had in the past. This year, everything is clicking, everything is going right, and they're getting production from all over the ice. That's what's scary.
You mentioned his name, and we know how good the Rangers skaters are, but I want to highlight that bad man between the pipes.
Yeah, he's good.
Igor Shesterkin. Oh, my goodness. I know the game went to double overtime in game
7 shots.
54 saves
on 57 shots.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is not, no, this is regular.
Yes, it's regular, but you'd have to praise it every time it happens because it's so, so good. Like, and just the fact that there were all those doubts in the regular season with Jonathan Quick playing so well and Shesterkin goes on, like, a bit of a cold streak, but just, like, to show up in the playoffs in the second round, 54 saves. It's so ridiculous. And he was also sort of the nucleus of this series, sort of the, I guess, the fighting, not the fighting, but
it
like the battle aspect.
Yeah.
It kind of got, I mean, yeah, got moved up a notch in game two.
Svechnikov, I know what you're saying, but always
to watch him,
in front of
he gets chopped by Svechnikov, and then
sent airborne.
He went like halfway out into the offensive zone
to go after him.
It was insane.
Yeah, about to fight, yeah.
And then the Rangers bring out Rempe, of course, to like sort of police the situation.
Naturally.
He skates right up to Freddie Anderson, like right up next to him, and gets cross-checked out of nowhere.
Sean Avery style.
And there's just no call, and the refs are just explaining the Rempe. They're like, we know exactly what you're here to do, so we're not going to let you do that. We're not giving you the call because we know what you just did.
Yeah. And it even felt that Igor, it kind of felt like, remember, I don't know if you guys remember this, 3 overtimes against Pittsburgh in the first round 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. He had like 70 saves or something ridiculous.
Louis Domingue, man.
It just against Louis Domingue. Shout out Louis Domingue. He's our minor league goalie right now. We have all the Infinity Stones.
Hartford
Jonathan
Wolfpack.
Quick, Louis Domingue, and Igor now. But it was just incredible in the heart of this team. It just doesn't, as a Ranger fan who kind of lives and dies with every, especially in the playoffs, it doesn't feel like everything goes this well this late.
I'll tell you what, the spirit of the Rangers has obviously changed too. There were so many times I can remember where, you know, someone would get up in Lundqvist's grill and no Ranger would answer for that. This is a much different team. Obviously, Rempe and Trouba are there, but throughout the lineup, they got guys who are going to fight for each other.
By the way, can Trouba relax on the penalties? What is he?
Can he relax in general? Have you seen the photo of him?
That was right after. He was overcompensating because he got like the worst penalty before that. But like he was in the box like four times.
Parallel to the ice.
He's going to start not playing.
Crazy. That's crazy.
He has the C on. He's going to start not playing.
You know, P.K. Subban actually came into his defense for that. I mean, that was an elbow that flew in. If that connects, he could be out for several games with a suspension. But P.K. Subban was like, this is playoff hockey. These are the sacrifices you make in a big moment. I kind of disagree with P.K.'s take on that because that's such a costly mistake
if it happens.
If
you're getting yourself
also,
taken
PK's
off the ice
PK's kind
for
of been a Ranger fan recently, too. What's up with that?
You know what it is? It's because he hates the Rangers. The Rangers hate him. I don't know if you remember his final season with the Devils, he got booed every time he touched the puck at MSG. He's just, I hate this, he's a smart analyst. The Rangers are that good.
Yeah.
That's why he's riding the bandwagon. He's aptly predicting that they're going to do bits in the Eastern Conference this year. That's very, very, very European, very soccer type of way to say that.
You also called Bobrovsky class earlier, which I loved because it's a perfect way of describing him.
Yeah, because he's a classy guy. He's a classy goaltender. One thing I will point out before we wrap up, the Carolina Hurricanes had 57 shots. Sebastian Aho had 7. He recorded 3 points. Jake Guentzel had 5. He recorded 2 goals. Brady Shea, the former Ranger, had 6 shots.
I have a Brady Shea jersey for
him. He's had a fantastic season, by the way, in Carolina. He's been great since he was a Ranger.
I know.
But I'm going to say some big names right now. Seth Jarvis had 3 shots, no points. Marty Natchez, 3 shots, no points. Jacob Slavin, 4 shots, no points. Jordan Staal, 8 shots, no points. Teuvo Teravainen, 6 shots, no points. We're talking about secondary and primary contributors for the Hurricanes not showing up. Meanwhile, the Rangers are getting points from the likes of Panarin, Zibanejad, and then you take it down a notch as well.
What was the first name you said on
Lafreniere?
That? Sorry.
Seth Jarvis.
Yeah. Where's he been? I see a lot of attention.
He came off to a great start in the first round.
Yeah.
But this has not been his series to
especially
remember.
Especially because how much attention, especially when he's in the middle and even kind of hovering around Igor. Ranger defense, 2-3 guys every time. So much attention on this guy. Really hasn't done anything.
That's such a Peter Laviolette thing, too. It's just the attention to details in front of the ice and in the neutral zone. It's Gerard Gallant. He's out coaching Gerard Gallant so heavily, at least in the way I see it.
Oh, no, he is. Yeah, and also just possibly the thinnest hair in the National Hockey League as well. Every time, it's unfortunate. Every time they show Laviolette, he's looking down at a replay, so it's his, like, scalp, and it's just, it's not great. Mm-hmm. But I do think, and to a point, just to wrap up with the Rangers stuff, mm-hmm. it does feel there's a trust and a leadership coming from Laviolette. You even see it in the post-game press conferences, where it feels almost 94-esque with the kind of coaching that team got, where it just feels like, hey, there's a real captain here who has a vision, and unstoppable in kind of getting that vision, and it gives you a lot of trust as a Ranger fan right now, and I'm excited for tonight. Tonight, if they win tonight, it'll make me feel like they can win the Stanley Cup in a lot of ways.
I think they already have a foot in the door to Conference Final.
Okay, yeah. That's, okay.
And I just want to rep for Carolina a little bit.
Yeah.
Diversify your portfolio. And by that, I mean they just need to start finding more creative ways to score on Igor Shesterkin. Mm-hmm. Albeit, that is a tall, tall task for any team in the NHL to try and find more ways to score on Igor.
And Aho can start with that, too. He's been doing things. He's a neutral. If a neutral watches hockey, would be like, that guy's incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they have been so one-dimensional in their offensive scheme. It's just move the puck around a little bit low near the goal and then fire it up to the blue line and then get bodies in front with a shot and hope there's a deflection, hope there's a rebound or something where the puck just kind of winds up in the back of the net. And it works to an extent because they're in close games with the Rangers, but I don't know if that is going to be enough to really get them by the Rangers, especially the way the Rangers play. They can score with anybody from anywhere, more or less.
And for as good as the Rangers' penalty kill has been, it's been perfect through two games, I think. Like, you got to start to criticize the Hurricanes for not, finding more ways to get the puck to the net and then just searching for different avenues of scoring.
And I think I'm not sure if there's been a 4-on-5 goal from the Rangers. I know they had 2 in the last series, but it doesn't feel like the Rangers are doing well. Like, it feels like the Hurricanes are in the zone for the 2 minutes and they are getting as many shots as they can. They're just not going in. And I think a lot of that goes to what Tucker said, which is Igor Shesterkin.
I mean, they outshot the Rangers by 20. And, Rod Brind'Amour famously said after the Eastern Conference Finals last year where they were swept by the Florida Panthers, I believe at least 2 of those games went to overtime, maybe 3. We didn't get swept. Well, they did. It just so happened that all 4 games were close. I mean, I'm not saying that the Rangers are going to go into Raleigh and win 2 games, but if they did and they were 4-3 and 4-3, it would feel very, very similar to what the Hurricanes did last year.
We're looking at another false sweep.
Looking at another false sweep where every game was an inch or two away, but the Rangers just had that extra leg. They're going to continue that quest tonight in Raleigh at 7 p.m. puck drop.
And
then the Avalanche and Stars get going at the American Airlines Arena tonight for Game 2 of their series at 9:30. Boys, it's been a busy week of finals, of NBA playoffs, Stanley Cup playoffs, baseball's in full swing. It's just about as exciting a time as it gets in the world of sports.
Almost the best time of the year, I'd say.
And for that reason, I want to thank you guys for joining me on this busy Thursday. I know, Tucker, you got to get out of here. You got to estudiar a little bit. Mm-hmm. You got to get listo for this examencito. Si. And, yeah, I want to give a shout-out to Angel Behind the Glass for doing some great work in production today. For Chris Carino, Tucker Austin, I've been James Burley. 5 on 3 is a production of WFUV Sports. We will see you guys next time.